Welcome to episode 17 of the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and on today's episode, I'm joined by Heather Sherman of Art to Eat Cakes to talk about her latest massive triumph, mold making, and things we should not be adding to food. Plus, Shannon Orr and Kyla Myers have called in some special holiday messages for you all. So whether you're deep into your holiday baking for clients or for family, traveling between seasonal events, or listening to this after the holidays are over when you're on to the next year's projects, let's get this show started to entertain and educate you as you get your sugar work done. Joining me now from Boulder, Colorado, is the amazing artist behind Art to Eat Cakes and my very own cake wife, the one and only Heather Sherman.
Yay! It's me. Hello. Thank you for having me today, Kim. It's a pleasure.
I'm so glad you're on. I should explain to everyone what we mean by cake wife.
Yeah, you should. You should. Yeah, go into it, please. Tell,
right,
tell
yes.
me the story. I always love to hear it.
It just started with some friends of mine here in the Women's Institute making jokes about cheese wives. And this was like your bestie at the WI meeting was your cheese wife because they just eat so much cheese. And then somewhere along the line, I made a joke about I needed a cake wife. And I think it was Kyla at first who said, I think Heather should be your cake wife. And I'm like, yeah, Heather should be my cake wife because like we're nerds. We're into the same kind of nerdy things. And then when I told Mike McCary, he was here for NEC last year. And I said, because he was mentioning you, which I know makes you giddy because why wouldn't it when the cake god mentions you? I know.
Yes.
And he was mentioning you. And I said, she's my cake wife. And he goes, yeah, I see that. So we have the cake marriage that is blessed by the cake god himself.
Cake god himself, fist bump. That's it. Well, geeky cakes unite, you know? I mean, it's like when you make an obscure nerd reference and everybody looks at you with that confused look and Kim laughs, you're like, okay, there you go.
That's right.
And there it is.
That's right. That's right. I did tell my husband, too. I'm like, I just got cake married. And he's like, to who? And I showed some of your cakes and he's like, Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I get that one. All right. Works for me. Who gets that reference? Oh, you do. Okay, good.
That's right.
The geeky references are the best. I mean, you know, when I was actually filming with Craftsy, it was one of the funniest times because the whole crew was like that. It was three guys, you know, and they kept covering and calling me stuff like Mother of Dragons, you know, and stuff like that. And do you want to build a dragon? He's going to melt your snowman. You know, it was the, like 3 days of 80s references and weird movies, and it's my tribe, my kin, it's my people. That's right.
Well, so. Let's tell people about your Craftsy class then.
Sure, yeah, you could get my Craftsy class. I made the Purple Dragon. The name is Sculpting Adventures, and I show you my method, my wires. I mean, I actually have the Craftsy class, but I've also got, if you go to my website, if you like Art to Eat, I would say, you know, go have fun. That's always what I tell people when I hand them my card. I say, you will have fun at this website, I guarantee. But visit the gallery, visit my classes because it's got like all sorts of freebies and stuff. But I have the Craftsy class there, which you buy from them. And then I have like the three that I've made myself. I've got the oh-so-famous rainbow pegacorn mama with the patterns and all that. And I've got a Christmas tree. I might be making some more here. I've got a kitchen, nice big commercial kitchen. So why not? Got some ideas bubbling. We'll see what happens with that.
Oh, that is exciting. I will link to these in the show notes, and I'm going to post the pegacorn because I think it is the most cited cake I've ever seen on the internet and never gives credit to you except for all the people who know you.
If you take one thing away from this interview, my friends, take this. Watermark your cake pictures. I mean, seriously, watermark your cake pictures. There's just no excuse these days because that cake I made for my 7-year-old daughter, I think I'd been making cakes for like 2 years, not even, you know. So my first big like, okay, I am going to make this cake. And I didn't even think twice before I posted it to Flickr. And I don't have to tell you the rest. I mean, it's gone. I call it galloping because every couple of months, somebody be like, oh, my gosh, somebody else's leather is using that for their profile picture. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, golly, you know. I mean, I'm on one hand, I'm grateful. On the other hand, I'm kind of like, you know, I've done other cakes. Check out my gallery. You might like it. Find something else you like. I've also done a follow-up to that piece, which where Mama teaches baby to fly. It's one of my favorites. So, yes, the Rainbow Pegacorn Mama. I mean, where did you first see that one, Kim? I'm sure it wasn't credited to me. It never is.
Oh, God. Before I knew you, definitely. Because when I realized it was yours after meeting you, I was like, holy crap, that's your cake. Like, I see that cake all over. God, it's just, it's been such a long time. I mean, on G Plus for years, Kyla and I would get cakes cited to us that were, okay, 80% Debbie Gourd cakes, right? Just off the bat. Yeah. Like, it's all the faux food stuff, the amazing stuff she makes. And so we would say, yeah, that's Debbie Gourd's. You should cite it. And then every once in a while, it would be that Pegacorn. There's that one, and I actually don't know the artist off the top of my head, the Planet Cakes.
Those
get cited absolutely at me all the time. And there's a few other cakes like that that just the muggles out there constantly say, have you seen this one? And it's like, yeah, I have. I mean, but you try to be polite because, you know, they're being nice and they're engaging and whatever. But yeah, the Pegacorn one was coming up. I can't even remember the first time because it was common. And then, you know, since I've seen it, it's been memed. I love the meme. It's one of those Pinterest fail type memes that comes up all the time.
Yeah, I want this cake for 10 people. Yes, I'm aware right of your pain. I hear you.
Sorry. By Sunday, and I have a $50 budget. That's right.
Right. I wanted to feed 10. And could you ship it tomorrow? Yes.
There's the ones where it's like people say meant to make this, and then someone's showing like M&Ms scattered on a board with white cake with a horn stuck in it. It's like, oh, that's what you got, right?
Well, I always feel bad when people are like, have you seen that cake wreck? I'm like, you know, they tried. They really did, you know.
Yeah.
I try really hard to see it as I inspired them to make something. You know, obviously I'm happier if they, especially if they really want theirs to turn out, buy my class. You know, I'll give you a coupon, something, anything, you know. But it's always going to be better than, you know, if you ask a group full of newbies how they would do it, which always kind of makes me like, okay, you know, you just got to take a step back and you're like, okay, well, I was a learner too, you know, and you have to remember the 10,000 hour rule. I got that on my blog, you know, I think it was a New York Times article that if you want to have mastery in something, it doesn't even matter what it is. If you spend 10,000 hours doing it, you're going to end up being a master and just keep working at it. So if somebody tries to make the rainbow pegacorn, send me a picture. You know, I want to see how it turned out and want to hear how everybody loved it.
That's
you know,
right.
If it makes more happy and cake, then I guess we all won, didn't we?
That's right. I saw on a parenting group, so it was a private post earlier today, someone had posted a complete, again, not a cake group, right? Parenting group. Someone who had never even touched fondant before. She'd found some, I think it was Octonauts. It was one of these kids shows. And it was like a little submarine cake. Off the top, we're starting with a carved sphere, right? Not beginner level.
Right.
You know, the cake that she was using was obviously a professional level cake. It had dried gum paste, little, you know, fishy bits around, you know, like corally type things around it and seaweed, you know, like the thing where you do, where you take the gum paste and you just curl it around a straw and you take the straw out the next day, right? It had that kind of stuff around it. Beautiful, clean lines, a nice character. Hers was, objectively, it was a hot mess, but it was her first time using fondant. And so she was posting this as a fail. And I mean, I was late to the post because it had already been like, you know, in U.S. time overnight. So everyone's like, no, it's great. And your kid probably loved it. And she's like, yeah, he did. And I'm like, okay, seriously, speaking as a professional, that is your first time doing fondant. That is a really good beginner's job. You picked a really hard thing. It is hard to carve a cake. It is hard to cover that shape. Yeah, I can just imagine that, you know, it was probably tearing on you and it driving you crazy as you did it, but you stuck with it. And just like if your kid sat down at the piano, because she'd said something about taking 8 hours. And I said, well, if your kid sat down at piano for 8 hours and plunked out chopsticks, you'd say, hey, pretty good. That's what you've done. You've done a beginner level thing. It wasn't the dream that you wanted. So to some extent, you know, appreciate that that's why people charge what they do, but...
Bingo, and you put your finger right on it, right? Is that now the beginner appreciates what goes into a cake like that and is now far more likely to, A, buy a cake like that, and number two, not complain when they get a proper quote.
That's right.
You know, a realistic quote.
So, exactly.
Yeah, you're right. I'm good for you. I'm glad you encouraged her.
Well, that's the eat the evidence thing. I mean, that's my whole thing with, you know, when I first started this blog was everyone should try to make cakes and cookies and, you know, edible art. And the worst case scenario is you have cake or cookie, eat the evidence. Nobody needs to know. I mean, or you can post it if you want to, but like you don't have to be perfect. You know, this is a struggle for me all the time. I mean, reminding myself, not everything is a judged competition. Sometimes it's just for my friends and it doesn't have to be perfectly centered and it's okay.
That's right. That's exactly right. It gets really tough because on one hand, you can absolutely teach yourself how to make a cake, right? You can do that 10,000 hours of mastery and be able to make any cake in the world. And there are some times when you should hire a professional, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a regular trade where, you know, you need to hire a professional if you want to have your roof done or your car fixed, right? Or your electricals done.
Yeah.
You know, you almost have to ask yourself, when you're doing event planning, how important is the event, right? If you really, I mean, it's your friends and family, there's no pressure. Have fun with it, right? But if it's like a wedding, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm going to feel bad. It's not going to work. And that's when you say to your cousin, who's really, really willing to do your fondant wedding cake, even though she's never touched fondant, that's the time to maybe say, you know what, I think I'll hire a professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like you. I'm like DIY. I'm like, oh, I can fix that circuit. And then I have to remind myself that no, sometimes, you know, there are times you hire a professional. And these cake shows kind of hork me off because they fight against that, right? Your friend or the person that you witnessed that you're talking about with this round cake that she tried to make that, you know, she learned so much in the 8 hours of the process. And now she appreciates that when she watches it on TV, that's not possible.
Oh, right? Yeah.
That's not reality. And these shows, I feel, have really set our whole field back, you know, and the makeup ones as well, like Face Off and stuff like that. And the perception that you can turn out this flawless looking, you know, showpiece in 8 hours. And it's just not...
It's not feasible.
It's not realistic to expect from your bakery. Yeah, right.
A lot of the comments on her post were other people saying, yeah, I've watched Cake Wars, I've watched this show, I've watched that show, and they make it look so easy. It's like, well, one, it is easier for them because they're professionals who got invited to this show. So they're not even just professionals, they're good professionals. Two,
right.
Editing. I mean, like, these shows are edited. Like, you know.
Right.
I mean, just like you and I could let off a string of expletives right now and I would edit it. Oh, look. No, we didn't. We just...
What are you talking about? I don't do that.
I mean, like, there's editing involved and there's the magic of television and it's not just a joke. And when people see these things, they really think that they can come to us and say, well, but you should only get paid like whatever minimum wage times 8 hours is.
Right.
And here I'll throw in 10 for ingredients because, you know, apparently nobody buys real flour. Their expectations
are
ridiculous.
Milk, it's just milk and flour. It's like, no, it's like butter. And have you priced butter recently?
Butter, jeez.
It's vanilla. And have you priced vanilla recently? You know, but if you want me to make you a cake that's milk and flour, I could sure do that, but I don't think you're going to like it.
It's a pancake at that point. Yeah, I'll mash a banana into some flour with some milk. You can have a pancake.
Right. Milk and flour.
That's right.
Pancake. No leavening. No leavening.
No. No eggs. No eggs. No.
But that's like saying that when you buy a building, that's like saying, I'm going to pay for the bricks.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not going to pay for the mortar. I'm not going to pay for the guy to put them together, the construction crew.
I'm
certainly not going to pay for some artist, some architect to design my building so that it doesn't fall down. I mean, it's just bricks.
It's just bricks. Well, so speaking of buildings, tell us about your most recent amazing cake. Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you. That was whew, that was an experience. It was more like a expedition than it was, you know, a cake, because I don't know if you guys know, but it's like all me, okay? I don't have like a whole crew and everything like that. I don't have a storefront. It's just me. And this bride and groom came to me through other channels, and I gave her the quote. I didn't ever expect her to be as excited about it as I was. But in the end, I'm so glad she was, because it was just an edifice. I couldn't have done it without the co-artist that helped me in the end, just in sheer volume. I mean, I'd have to look at my numbers, but it was like 100 pounds of fondant. It was like 40 or 50 pounds of gum paste. It was 10 pounds of isomalt stained glass windows. I think I used 7 pounds of edible mold material to make the actual molds itself. I mean, it was just epic. I worked on that cake from August, where I started the actual Corel drawings, you know, over the photographs of the Sagrada windows that she found significant, and then actually carving the molds themselves, and then throwing all of those molds, all of them. And a lot of them were on curved bases, so
yeah,
you gotta make all those little cardboard bases, right? I mean, it was just, the amount of work was, it was lots and lots of hours, lots and lots and lots of hours. So, but we made it, you know. I mean, it was quite the exciting night. I mean, people were just fascinated, you know, and I think that's really, I mean, they always say that, you know, well, what's your middle of the night reason, right? Why do you do this to yourself, right? Well, it's for those smiles. It's for that excitement. Which is what I feel we're selling. We've talked about that before, right? It's not, I'm not selling the birthday cake that your grandma made, you know, with the, you know, the squirted icing, you know, the cricket. I'm selling you oh my gosh, you know, and they were stunned. They were so happy with that cake, and that's what I consider to be the success. That she told me later that I read her mind. That I did exactly what she wanted.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Right? I mean, that's where you kind of go, oh, you could finally let the little anxiety monkey go to sleep, you know? She loved it. She loved it. I think that a lot of times we cake artists, I've read about this so many times in the groups where they're like, I dropped it off, and I don't know if they liked it or not. It's like, it's almost worse than not getting paid than to not be told that they loved your art and that they're happy with what they paid for and that they would do it again. That was the win for me here. So I can pat myself on the back and be proud of that one. So
yeah, I'll have to link to some pictures of it. It wasn't the Sagrada directly, but it was elements of it, correct?
Right. And I asked her that early on. I'm like, do you want me to just copy the Basilica itself? She's like, no, 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 no. She's like, that's not what I want. She says, I want something that is, she wanted a tear cake, which I don't usually do tiered cakes, you know. She says, I wanted to do something that's going to remind us of how we felt when we stood underneath these beautiful, fiery windows. And she's a Leo and he's an Aries. And that was very central to the theme. The two hearts, one fire, that they were on fire when they were underneath the windows. And, you know, I mean, I think that's key too, is that when you're sitting there and you're listening to your client describe their dream cake, you almost have to close your own eyes and get in their head. You know, what are they seeing? What's making them so excited right now that they have to describe it to you? And then, of course, she brought out the phone and she had to show me pictures and pictures and pictures. And that's what I did. I took the panels that she really, really liked. I rendered them as a sculpture, you know, on those same drafted lines that I did on the Corel draw on the computer, and then go from there. I mean, everything was fitted together and designed as a whole from the beginning. Just to interject really quick, you can find all of this on my website, in my gallery. If you click on the picture of the Sagrada, it's got three separate pages that are all linked together with links there. One is the final pictures. One is the assembly, the final assembly, because we had to bring it in pieces and assemble it on site. And then the third one was my in progress, my journal of, you know, what I did, how I did, when it was, you know, all the molds, all the isomalt windows, all the painting is all there. So, but is there anything in specific that you found like, wanted to ask you about it. It's such a huge project. I could ramble for days.
Well, I just remember there, you know, there were times where I wanted to poke you with something I saw on the internet. I'm like, oh no, Heather's busy. Cake Wifey is busy this week. No, no, no. So we should name your assistants so we give them credit.
I couldn't have done it without Lisa Herrera. She's a cake come true. She's right here in Denver, or actually, you know, like a Firestone. She does some amazing stuff herself. You have to look her up. We also had Brian Williams, who is really heavily involved in not only the ices, but in our own show here in Colorado, the Sweet Times of the Rockies. Those folks here in Colorado, he's instrumental. I mean, he's done some of the greatest days of sharing, and really, he helped me do a lot of the grunt work, you know, the day-to-day rolling flames and so much of that. And then Rebecca Hauger came out, Becca's Edible Art, and she is just the greatest. I mean, I could not have done it without hers. She came out, she rolled, covered a whole bunch of them in fondant and helped us at the very, very end stages when everything is just going sticky and crazy at the same time. You guys know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't believe how well we worked together as a team, and I just, again, I couldn't have done it without them. I mean, just the sheer physical labor that was involved, and then the fact that it was skilled, right? I mean, you can't teach somebody how to put fondant on when you're in a rush like that. So I was really lucky to be able to have these co-artists come out and help me create this vision. They were just as much as part of it as I was, and I really appreciate it. And thank you guys, really, from the bottom of my heart. I hope you're happy with the piece of artwork that we created.
After the interview, Heather was concerned that she hadn't properly thanked everyone involved, so she sent me some voicemail messages ensuring that she had everyone covered. Let's play those as if it's a thank you at an awards show, because frankly, this cake was so amazing that it deserves an award.
Hey now, Kim, and Eat the Evidence. Thanks again for having me on. And I just really wanted to thank some people for all their help with this Sagrada cake, the cake this lifetime that I really couldn't have done it without their help. The people that helped me actually put the cake together and in my final days when it was just craziness. Brian Williams, I could not have done it without him. He's instrumental here in our show in Colorado, the Sweet Times in the Rockies. And also with the Colorado Wyoming Ices, he kept me on straight. He helped with a lot of details. Just an amazing cake artist. Rebecca Hauger of Becca's Edible Art. My goodness, I could not have done it without her either. She came out special to help us. She did a lot of carving, a lot of fondant covering, a lot of schlepping. Oh my goodness, I could not have put that cake together without Rebecca. And then Lisa Herrera, a cake from Cruz. Lisa is my cake sister from another mother. I just love her to pieces. I couldn't have done it without some help with buttercream. And just she did the middle tier. She did a lot of stuff. My God, I could not have done it without those three co-artists. And also, I can't forget to thank my sponsors, Caljava. I could not have done it without the company. I know it sounds crazy, but that stuff is just, I mean, it's amazing. It's hard. It's smooth. It's white. I love it. I also need to thank Peggy Tucker and Kate Clay, Ice Malt. I was so afraid of Ice Malt. And she was so sweet to me, and I couldn't have done all those windows without her product. I really enjoy it as well. It responds very nicely. And my final thank you has to go out to the bride and groom. I couldn't have done any of this if it wasn't for their vision and for their whole wedding sphere, and I'm so very glad that they were so happy with it. To me, that's just as much thanks as I can possibly ask for. So thank you again, all of you. I really appreciate your help. I could not have done it without you. Thank you.
We're on an audio podcast talking about a visual medium, so it's a little hard. Describe in your words like how it sort of laid out and stacked up and what it looked like.
I should first tell you that when I was in engineering school, I had a minor in civil, and it was a good thing because I used all of that stuff. The cake itself was internally lit from behind. All those isomalt windows were backlit with these LED battery pack lights, and I was afraid at first that they weren't going to be bright enough, but man, they were like, bright as the face of the sun, you know. So the structure was on the bottom, she wanted everything in bases of 8. So on the bottom, there was 3 what I called castles, and they were roughly, I want to say, 15 inches high by 7 by like 5, right? And they were almost octagonal shaped, and they all formed a bottom ring on top of which there was a foam right inside of them. And on top of that was another ring of windows that was a octagonal star. So each window formed one side of the 16-point star that went on top of that. And on top of that was just a plain tier surrounded by sugar flames. And then on top of that was their actual topper, which she had a Gaudi sculpture that she had purchased while they were visiting the church in Barcelona. And she showed me pictures of that and wanted me to add their Leo Aries-ness in all their fires. So that's what I did. I did the Leo Aries, you know, her with her little sexy tail, him with his big horns, you know, and the fire hair. And that was on top of everything. There was lit stained glass on the bottom panels. On the bottom castles, each front had a curved stained glass panel with 12 windows in each panel. Again, about 15 inches high, curved, with a roof, right? It was really cool because we were able to take the roof off of one of the castle cakes, and that was what she cut into. Okay. Where they served it to each other with it still lit. So that was really
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, that was awesome. It was a piece of engineering, you know. The castle portions that went around the foam center, the core that had the thread rod between it, those were transported individually. Each castle cake, you might have to go to my website, and actually it's hard to describe, but each castle cake had a front that was sugar, right? The molded sugar, and then the isomalt. And that was over in a panel that I had made out of clear cutting boards and then sealed with plastic wrap that held all the electronics, the light. And then the battery pack ran underneath the board that all the cake sat on, and the two panels, you know, sandwiched together, went in front of all the cake, wire ran underneath, and the whole piece pedaled together around the core that held up the center, the Oxistar. I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we transported a total of, it would have been 10 cakes to the venue and assembled them there, put it all together.
Yeah, I just loaded up one of the pictures. And so you've also got basically, is that like flying buttresses with royal icing work in the middle there? Is that what that is?
Yeah, the flame arches. And I will admit to you, Ken, that I had originally intended to use flexible chocolate in there. And it's just, you know, it's like one of those roll with the punches game time decision things where you're like, dang it, it didn't work. I don't have another day. I'm just going to go with it. And that's what we ended up with. Those are gum paste. The buttresses themselves are also dried gum paste. The buttresses were one of the first things I set up and then added the curls inside, almost quill style, quite a good time later. So those buttresses are solid gum paste. There is no support in there.
Yeah, that's what I figured looking at it. But honestly, flexible chocolate and that, I think it may have drooped. I think you made the right decision to go with something that dries firmer.
Yeah, you know, well, I was going to make panels itself, you know, with layers of the chocolate and then put them together in layers on the actual buttress themselves. If it had worked, it would have been really, really cool. If I'd had the time, what I would have done is I would have made myself another mold that looked like flames, dancing flames, mm-hmm. right? With like, I don't know, probably rolled gum paste. And then let that dry and then cast a mold out of it so that when I used the flexible chocolate, then it had a little bit of dimension instead of just going totally flat. You know, like a lace mat.
Right.
Right? That's what I needed to do. And I just, I had time. You know, but I left how it turned out. It was definitely one of those. She said that she did not want any flowers on the cake. You know, we cakers, we use flowers to cover stuff up, right? So you might notice that this cake has blooms of flame.
Yes.
And yeah, that's literally what I did. I was take those curled flames and then put them into clumps, and then I would add those clumps of flame where you would normally have flowers. Right. Cool, huh?
Well, it's a gorgeous effect. I mean... Yeah, as someone who doesn't do a lot of floral cakes, I mean, this is why we're friends. I would rather do something like that than flowers myself.
Yes, me too. That's why I'm like, man, this job just, oh, I mean, I thanked her over and over for giving me this opportunity to create something like this. I mean, there's a lot of skull sweat involved. I tell you, just designing the process and how to get the cake there was almost as much as anything else. I mean, at one point I discovered that I had a 36-inch board, which fit it. It was perfect, right? But most doorways are 32 inches. Yeah. What do you do? I have like a week of insomnia, and then finally I figured it out, and I'm like, okay, we'll be all right.
So you just tilted it sideways, right? Because that's what you do.
Yeah, exactly. I ended up making what I called a foam lollipop. So normally you would take your threaded rod, you would put it into your board, you'd bolt it down, right? And then you'd take your foam dummies, which hold up your second layer, you know, and are the center of where the castle cakes were, right? And you would also bolt that down, right? I just took out the bottom bolt and just saran wrapped everything so that it was, you know. In fact, there's a picture of it in the journal. You know, it's just this big, long, half-inch studded rod with this huge foam end on it. It was wrapped half to death, and it was my lollipop.
How much of like, where is the actual cake versus the foam in the whole construction then?
The only place that there's foam is inside of the ring of castle cakes. So each castle cake is in itself gigantic. Like I said, like 15 inches by like, it goes like 6 inches deep, and then they're like 7 inches wide, and there's 8 of them that go around a center dead space.
Okay.
Right? That dead space is styrofoam.
Right.
And at some point I'm like, you know, we can put cake in there, but once I thought through the logistics of it, I realized it would just be so much easier if we just put it in there and then I served kitchen cakes. I mean, as it was, that design already served 340.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of cake.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of cake. A lot of cake. You never realize how much is there. But, it's just the dead space in the center. Because it had to have something to put that huge octo star with the windows. That was actually my favorite level because the paneling was really difficult. If you notice, it's got the rectangular with the curved top. Mm-hmm. Rosette style stained glass window panels, and those were really tough to mold.
I bet.
Just cute little aside, really quick. I thought I would be like, I like to watch Face Off. I don't know if you watch that one or not. The makeup show where they make the funny little masks and prosthetics, and you know, it's a lot like our cake shows that are competitive style and eliminate a competitor and that sort of thing. But they always make theirs out of clay. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to be all like, you know, I'm going to go clay this time and make my molds out of clay. And I made the first one, which was for the roof. And it was such a pain in the butt that I finally decided, I'm like, you know what? What would you normally, well, I would do this in gum paste. I would do it in Calatrava's, yes, push here. Calatrava's amazing gum paste. And it really is pretty amazing stuff. I love it. But it sets up so nice and hard. It's like better than the clay that I bought. And it smooths out better. And it takes a knife better. And I'm like, you know what? Heck with it. I'm just going to sculpt all the rest of these panels in gum paste and use that to throw my mold on. And you know what? It worked. It worked way better than the air-dry clay. Oh,
because, yeah, those circle windows look super fragile.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I had to freeze all of those. And then, of course, you know, you throw always half again as many as you need and pick the best ones. That was some heavy-duty detail. I actually cut that mold sculpt separate and then put them together before I poured the actual silicone to make the mold itself. Does that make sense?
Right. Okay. So now, so you made a mold for these panels and then what, rolled the gum paste in to the mold each time?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay.
But the actual original that I did was also sculpted from gum paste.
Right. Because, I mean, that is some amazing mold. Like, just knowing how much of a pain it is to get things out of a mold intact. I mean,
yeah.
This is amazing work for molding. I mean, God, I mean, like it's, I'm looking at one of the photos right now, the lit detail photo of that middle tier with the round windows. And I just kind of gobsmacked that you got all of those little pieces out of a mold without them breaking.
Yeah, it was tough. You got to grease your mold real good. You got to make sure that you're using a really high quality gum paste. Like I got it, you know, again, a Calatrava gum paste. It's a creature of its own. And then I get it really, really loose, hot, kneaded, almost sticky liquid. And then I freeze the thing. I mean, freeze it solid. It usually peels right off. If it's not frozen solid, like it's been in there for an hour, seriously, solid, in my deep freeze. Wow. And then you decide whichever side is your most difficult, and you go the other direction. So I would start at the toe for those particular panels and then pull it away all the way up to the top. On the original mold, on the original piece of sculpture, right, if you look at that picture, you'll see that there are three holes, right? There's the center rosette, and then there's each bishop-tipped window, your curved-tipped window, two of them, right?
Right.
So in the original mold, I just left those blank. And then I went back, and I rolled out more gum paste, cut out the shape of that window, and then used my circle cutters to make those precise little holes in the rosette and in the window panel itself. Yeah.
Okay.
And then let it all dry, and then made a mold of it. Does that make sense?
So you weren't pulling that, because I'm looking at, like, the flowery thing, and I'm thinking, how did you get that out of the mold? But so you're saying that was separate, put in?
That was part of the mold.
Oh, my God.
The original I did in pieces. Had to do the original in pieces, which was put together.
Right.
But after I had the original, which was exactly the same way the mold looks, that's why I pulled the mold on. And yeah, then each rosette window got pulled out of that mold.
Wow. Just, you know, I use molds a lot for the stuff I do. And it's one thing pulling something that's stretchy and snaps back, like the gummy or whatever. You know, pulling that out of a mold is not a big deal because it snaps itself back. But if you snap the gum paste, you're just done with that piece.
And I've learned that the roll is best, right? You take the mold, which is frozen, right? And you put it mold with the image down, right? So your gum paste is against your mat. And then instead of trying to pull the gum paste out of the mold, you roll the mold away from the gum paste. And sometimes I'll even take a little bit of Crisco and put it like on whatever it is I want it to stick to so that it's got a little bit of surface tension. And then put your gum paste thing. So the gum paste is almost like you got a little bit of Crisco on its back. And then again, I pull that mold, just I roll it away. Because your mold, you're not going to hurt your mold.
Right.
And then I usually will take a little teeny tiny dental pick tool, right? I have a flat one. And as you pull it away, you just pull little bits that might stick in it at the curve point. And that usually avoids stress, at least to the point where you can pat it back into shape and then let it sit for a bit longer. The really hard part was the curved ones, those giant big ones.
Right.
Because when you pull it off on that curve, it was on a cardboard curve, right, from cereal boxes. I never threw cereal boxes away. Then it would want to, like, ooze to the sides. But if it's flat, you just peel it away, you know.
Right, yeah, because I'm looking now at your photo where you've got, like, I can see crispy rice underneath. But yeah, because it's just amazing. I mean, this, I don't want to say work of art, because it sounds trite, frankly. It doesn't,
aww,
you know, so many of your cakes are works of art. This is other level. This thing is amazing. And I remember when you first were looking at the contract for how much to charge, and Cornyn and I were both like, yeah, charge more. But you wanted the job. So, I mean, okay, so there's a question. Ultimately, purely on a business thing, because obviously you feel very fulfilled artistically with this. Do you feel like you were paid enough for this?
You know, that's a really tough question, because I think that it was fair, that I was actually dead on precise, that I followed every rule that I knew about pricing, that I consulted with several people in the business that I'll allow to remain anonymous, and I got a range of answers from little high to that's really low to you're spot on. And I asked non-industry people. I got some good advice there. And in the end, we all go over on hours. Right?
Right.
So, and that's always where I go over to. I think that I'm going to spend one day messing with flexible chocolate, and I end up spending 3 days. You know? I thought it would take, you know, a couple of days to throw those molds. No, it took a full couple of weeks, you know. Along those lines, I was hired fairly to create this piece of work. Absolutely. And it was a close thing. If I added it up, I would say she paid me exactly for every hour at a decent wage. Did my business make a profit? Probably not. And I think that that's something that a lot of times business owners and a lot of business cake classes don't take into account, right? If you were to hire you, you would mark your work up. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So if you charge $100, then your business should charge $130.
Right.
Right? Because and this is how all businesses work. And for some reason, cake artists are like, oh, well, I got paid by the hour and I got paid for my materials and I got paid, you know, so I feel good about it. But did my business make a profit? I don't really know. I have not worked the numbers yet. It would be a close thing to say whether or not Art to Eat Cakes made a profit. Heather Sherman was paid fairly to make her artwork, and it was a close thing. It was a real close thing.
But you're ultimately satisfied then. You don't feel like, oh, I sank way too much time into this or anything like that.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I think that's almost a win, right?
It is like, a win. Hey. In this business, are you kidding? This whole cake is a major win. It's amazing.
Yes, it was. You heard me say that before, that I'm always fond of saying that it's a series of wins, right? First win, you started the cake, right? Second win, you finished the cake. Third win, did you get pictures of the cake? Fourth win, did you take it to the venue and did it arrive intact? Oh, big win. And then the biggest win of all, did your client like it? They smiled. Did they get all excited? At their ceremony, this couple discussed how they always wanted to feel that youthful excitement for life. Right, that thrill, that, oh my gosh, did you see it? And really, that's what we do, cake artists. Did you hear me? That's what we do. We make that excited smile, you know, that, oh, I remember what it's like to be excited about stuff. We lose that as adults. We do. And we get sad and gray, and we lose our color. And I want to make you a cake that gets you so excited that for a minute you forgot you're an adult. And that's the ultimate win. So, yeah, I won.
That should be your slogan. I want to make you forget that you're an adult. That is awesome. And that is so you. I love that. I'm giddy. That should be his t-shirt and a bumper sticker and the whole thing.
Yes, I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, my cake will make you forget you're an adult. That's right. That's right. One of my favorite cake smiles, if you can see it, if you go on my gallery, was Derek Trucks, right? Tedeschi Trucks Band, Derek Trucks, Allman Brothers. And he looks at this cake, and he gets this big old grin, this big old smile, this big old, oh, we're going to eat cake, we're going to eat cake, you know? And that's what makes all the long hours, all the stress, all the, oh my God, is it going to go together? That's what really makes it worth it for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make art. Yeah, that's edible. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I remember a week or two before this thing was due, I had in-laws coming and going, and I had Pam's birthday to deal with, and I thought I was stressed, and I'd turn around and look at you and go, no, I'm not even in the same, because you were, like, so stressed and had so much work to do, and it sucks. I mean, anyone listening right now who's up to their eyeballs in it, it's okay to hate cake right now, because
it is.
When that thing's done and delivered, it's magic.
That's right. You're going to love it. It's worth it. Whatever you're going through right now, no matter how much you hate it, just stick with it for this cake. You don't have to do the next one. Just this one.
We're all going to do the next one. Let's not.
Right. You know?
It's like
you're absolutely right. There's that permission to say, you know what? It's not always cake. It's not always buttercream. It's not always sweet.
No, sometimes
we
it's actually really horrible.
For our art. Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, aside from the sheer physical work and the mental work and the tedium, right? There's so much tedium in what we do. Sometimes what makes it beautiful is that repetitive thing, but that's tedious. And, you know, some people, you can get into that nice groove with the tedium if you've got a good podcast on or Netflix or whatever you like. But still, at the end of the day, if you've just put on 1,000 dragées or you've just cut 1,000 eyelets or you've cut, you know, 100 cookies of the same thing, that tedium can really wear you down. And it is okay to feel like, well, that sucked. Because at the end, oh my God, you have this amazing thing.
That's true. And you know, there's also the other side of the spectrum. Oh my God, the draghi won't stick. Oh my God, the fondant is falling. Oh, it's the stress that gets me in that moment, that whatever you foresaw it doing, it's not cooperating. Mm-hmm. And it's like it has mind of its own. And you're like, okay, I know I can conquer this, but I'm tired and I you know, right? It's almost exactly the opposite of the doldrums. Mm-hmm. It's the stress. Yeah. You know, and that's where I have to really remember that and breathe through it and go, okay, you're doing something great here. So if you're stressed or if you're doldrummed, you can do this, right?
You can do it.
Cake for nation.
That's right. Well, and that going back to the lady I was talking about earlier, I mean, like, I don't even know this lady, the one who posted the Octonaut cake. It's just someone on a message board. But there again, that's part of why I could sympathize with her is, can you imagine the first time you did fondant, you're covering a half sphere with a divot carved in it? Oh my God. And like, we've all had fondant, you know, tear. And now imagine fondant is tearing, and all you've ever seen are cake shows on TV where it doesn't do that. Or if it does do it, they make it out to be a dramatic thing that someone's done something wrong, as if fondant doesn't just tear because it tears itself to pieces. So, like, that's right. Why I could really sympathize with her. I could just imagine. Now, she's baked this thing. She's cut this thing. Maybe she's iced it. I don't even know, right? Like, so beginner level. But can you just I can really put myself in her shoes of now she's rolling fondant, which she doesn't know about how thick it is. You guarantee she's not using any of those various sticks or spacers to get a specific thickness. So it might be half thick over here and thicker over here or whatever. She just rolled this out. Probably no one taught her how to, you know, roll it over the pin and carry it with a pin. She probably just stuck her hands under that and lifted it over with her fingers going through it. Like, you can just imagine the one problem after, and then, and that panic of, it's sliding off the cake, I'm going to shove it on, oh my God, now that's tearing over, and just all the swear words come out. And she just wanted to make a cake for her kid. That's why I could praise that. I could honestly praise her cake, because I know the blood, sweat, and tears she put into it, which probably violates all health code, but, you know.
Oh, bless the noob. I say bless the noob.
Bless the noob.
You are the champion of the cake industry. I bow to you, the noob. You are our lifeblood. We owe everything to you.
Well, we were all there.
I mean, seriously.
We were all
there. People don't think about it at like cake shows and stuff, but the noob, the person who is new to caking, they're the ones who buy classes. They're the ones who attend shows. They're the ones who try different fondants. They're the ones who buy all those tools at the cake show. You know what I mean? If you go to any cake show and you look at the proportion, it's going to be people who are really, really new, and then people who are maybe a little bit more professional, you know, your intermediate category. And then it starts to taper off, you know, up at the top, which is exactly the way that it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian and I have talked about this extensively since he's so involved in the cake show here in Colorado, is that cake shows really have to make those new level cakers feel good about themselves and about cake and about coming to the cake show. And,
agreed, yeah.
Austin does a good job of that, you know, of making everybody feel seen, you know, and heard and recognized, and not only properly judged, but with acceptable and constructive criticism, as opposed to just what you didn't like, you know, on something.
Yeah, and so that's why I encourage people to compete, and I do. I mean, I'm still editing the previous episode, but it's like one of the things I edited in the conversation today with Mary was, to some extent, if you emotionally cannot handle criticism, competition may not be for you. But
this is true.
But the rest of the time, even if you like, don't go to win. We always say this: don't go to the win. I've done it myself. You know, it's and then I did win. So like, that's a bad example. But don't.
How you are?
I know. I'm trouble. It's why you love me. But so you don't go to win, because if you don't, then you're gutted. You go to learn. You go to improve yourself. We talk about that over and over again. But you know, if I was going to encourage a beginner who, let's just say, had unlimited airfare, Austin would be one of the first shows I would send them towards, and Cake International would be one of the last. Because Austin's got that beginner category. You are rewarded at a show like Austin more for trying not just new things like with the innovator stuff, but for It's not A, that it's A for effort, because, you know, that doesn't get at anybody anywhere. But the judging at a show like Austin is telling you, we could see where you were going with this. You may not have done this part expertly, but you're in the beginner right. category. We see the spark of something good, and
right.
bravo, brava. Whereas Cake International, because it doesn't have any of those levels, it is just on. Like, you are either the best or nothing. I mean, to, you know, it's still valuable. Obviously, I still enter it, but you're
braver than I am. I'm scared.
Well,
y'all got me scared. I watched that beautiful little lace work thing that got disqualified this last time, of something about a board. You could see the board.
Okay.
I just cried for it. I'm like, oh, that's scary. That's scary. You come all the way from China with that string work, with that real icing, you know, string work. And for a board, I'd be crushed. I mean, competition is good, but you're right. If you go to win, you know, it's kind of putting your heart on a platter. And as long as you realize that it really, in the end, has nothing to do with you or your art, mm-hmm. it's just that one situation, that one slice of time, that one experience, and it has nothing to do with any other future experiences.
That's right.
You know,
Michelle Boyd has many times said, well, if you don't like your result, well, you're on to the next thing. So, you know, that's, I agree with that. And I mean, and we've talked about, again, like, it is okay to get a disappointing result. It is okay to be disappointed. It is okay to politely, respectfully disagree with judges. It is okay right. to feel like I wasn't understood and I'm upset about that, as long as you're mature and professional about it. But at the end of the day, you posted on Facebook, your friends give you love, whatever, you get over it and you move on. And sometimes you win big and sometimes you don't. Now, but yeah, as a beginner, a show like Austin, and it's not just Austin, look at the rules, okay? Any show anyone's thinking of going into, go look at the rules and the categories. And if it's got beginner, advanced, intermediate, professional, whatever, that I would encourage beginners to do, because you get the valuable feedback. You're only competing against people of your level, and it sort of, you get your feet wet. Whereas if you're a newbie and you put your first cake in at Cake International, okay, now sometimes people do that and they do really well, and we all look at them and pretend to applaud them while we seethe with jealousy.
But yes, just it. I mean, it's a mixed bag. But I mean, yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if I were a cake show director, I would really make sure that those are the people that go away from my show feeling patted on the head, feeling encouraged, feeling excited to do the next thing. Because, you know, who cares about the masters? Who cares about the professionals? No, the show is focused on the heart and lifeblood, which is the intermediate and new to advanced baker, right? I'm not a noob. I know to refrigerate my buttercream, you know, but I'm going to enter a cake show because I found a cake show. That's technically not a noob. That's almost like an advanced beginner, right?
Right, yeah.
Those people, they spend the money. They're the reasons that cake shows, I don't want to say exist, but they are definitely the largest demographic of participant. That's undeniable. So,
on the pure economics of it, ask me how much vendor stuff I spent at Cake International this year.
How much?
Zero. Not because I didn't care. I mean, part of it was because I was really busy recording stuff for a podcast, but I kind of have hit that point where when I go to cake shows now, like, there's some stuff I want when I get to Austin. Like, it'll be one of these things where I know one of my friends who makes tools, you know, because we have friends who make the cool tools. And I know they're coming out with something new and they're going to launch it at Austin, or I know that I can get it at Austin without paying shipping from the US or whatever. So I make a shopping list for Austin, but where once upon a time that was 10 or 20 things that I needed.
Or you're like, oh, let's go shopping. Oh my God, what's that? Oh, what's that? You know, it was like this glut of buying stuff.
Now it's like, got it. Don't need it. I have something better than that. Oh, I see that someone's making that. Yeah, okay, that's a different version of something I already have, but I'm not going to get two of them. Oh, I didn't even like that thing, so no, I don't want the new version of that. Because you get the experience, you get knowing better what you need and what you make, and you fall into your niche, and you find out that you, like, I mean, God, can you imagine if I had spent a fortune early on flower making stuff? I mean, I have a vein. I have a veiner, you know. I have a Vayner. I have some cutters, you know, but like really generic cutters. Like,
yeah.
And frankly, the flower cutters I have, they're all things I bought because they look like they could be other things.
Right. Ditto.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm guilty.
I could not tell you.
If you're really into it, man, you can spend yourself just, you know, they got everything, you know, any tool in the world. I hear you. And it's the intermediates and advanced beginners who spend the money there. So,
that's right.
Again, I, every show that I've attended that I see being successful does this. They make the advanced beginner and the intermediate feel comfortable and happy and rewarded and seen in their art. Mm-hmm. You know, so whatever Austin's doing, kudos. Keep it up.
It's reflected in the demos and the classes and stuff too. And I mean, say something like Cake International, they don't do a lot of hands-on classes. I don't know if any, actually. No, that's not true. No, they do have some hands-on classes during the thing. But, this is proving the point, because I actually don't look to see what the paid classes and demos are. Because, like, I don't want to sound snide, but they're below my level or they're not my interest, right? Because I know what I'm doing for the stuff I want to do enough that it is rare that a show with wide appeal is going to have a demo or a class that I personally want at this point. 5 years ago, yes. Years ago, I went to demos and classes and stuff. And I did just do a class with Don Parrott, because I've been sitting here doing cakes for all these years and I didn't know how to do pressure piping, right? So Don Parrott was at Jackie Kelly's studio right after Cake International. They're my friends anyway, so it was like hanging out with friends. But I paid for that class to finally force myself to sit down and learn some pressure piping, not because I'm going to go make a bazillion pressure pipe cakes, but it was a skill I wanted under my belt. And it was
tough. Oh, and they looked great. Those were really cool.
The ornaments?
That was the glassy looking thing, right?
Yeah,
it looked like a piece of glass or something.
It's isomalt. I've got them right here beside me. So what it was is, I was actually fairly indifferent to the whole isomalt part of it. That was cool, but that was not what I wanted to learn, was pressure piping and how to do it. And,
right.
And Dawn's secret tips and tricks that are totally worth taking a class with her. And she's all over the place. So definitely, I mean, anyone listening, if you can take a Dawn class, totally do it. Because 20 minutes into the class, it's not like I became an expert piper. Guys, I'm not a piper. It's not my thing. But I felt like, oh, you just gave me some tips that I can now use my skill set, which is more modeling, sculpty stuff.
Yep.
And I feel like I can now do this in Royal Icing without having to be an expert piper. We did like your Royal Icing transfer type thing, dried them off. We went shopping. Because it was just the three of us, like there were no other students. So we went to Marks and Spencer's and we were watching Dawn buy stuff that she was going to take back. And we went and had dinner and like we hung out, like, right? Because at that point it was friends. It wasn't like we had to be on a specific schedule or whatever. So not a normal class experience. I don't think if you take a class with Dawn, you get to go shopping at Marks and Spencer on a regular basis. But
that sounds pretty awesome.
Right. So
I'm in.
But process wise, yeah, we dried the transfers, and then she showed us how to pour an ice malt base, put the transfer on top, and then an ice malt topper. And then, you know, we could have sat there and done more piping around it, but by that point it was late and we were tired, and Jackie and I, not being pipers, were like, no, that's good. We're done with piping now.
We're good.
So
pipers. All I can think of when I hear you say pipers is my stepfather and his bagpipes.
His bagpipes. I have a sound of Jackie of bagpipes for Jackie the cake ninja, we call her, because of her chef's coat looks like one of her old pictures of chef coat looks like a ninja. So that's why she's the cake.
I love her tartan coat. Her tartan coat is just the greatest.
That's a new one, yeah.
She's the greatest. You give her a hug and a kiss if you see her soon before I do.
I will. Well, she's coming to Austin.
Well, all right. Well, you know, that's always a draw.
Yeah. I think she's going to teach her car class in Austin.
Oh, that's going to be great. That's the one with the little chassis under it. That's
using the remote control.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a class I want to take.
Hello, Eat the Evidence audience. How are you doing? This is Shannon reporting as Queen of Texoma and the blogger of Kitchen Witch Chronicles. I just want to tell everybody to have happy holidays, happy new year, Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, whatever you got. Just have a happy day. make it merry, make it sweet. It's been a wonderful year. Cake competition season is about to start again, and I really hope that everybody puts their best foot forward. I hope to meet anybody that I haven't met yet, and I hope to get hugs from people I have met already. I can't thank you enough for what a wonderful year I've had personally, growing with all of you. And I just look forward to 2018. Let's make it happen. Bye.
I mean, I never paid for a lot of classes when I was a beginner because I couldn't cost justify, particularly like the professional level class. You know, it was $800 full day classes. I couldn't justify that. But I paid for the little mini class over here and a demo over here and things like that. And, you know, you and I started before there was a YouTube channel for everything.
Right.
So now you can, you know, sometimes get, but you have to be choosy with the YouTube because honestly, there's a lot of dreck on YouTube. There's a lot of amazing stuff. But a lot of people just think they can throw anything up.
There's one YouTube video right now where the splash picture, right, the preview picture, is a split screen between my Pegacorn and Natalie's side surfs, right, with the farting rainbows.
Yeah.
And if you push on the video, it has nothing to do with either cake. It's a how to do a drip cake. And it's got like 500,000 views.
Yeah.
Probably because people click on it. And they realize, what, this is full of, and then they click off of it. But it doesn't matter because the monetization has already occurred.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Or have you seen how often, like, you're watching a cool tutorial by one of the good people, and then off to the side on YouTube, I mean, we all fall down YouTube rabbit holes. It's the bane of our existence. But it'll have something, it'll catch your eye because it's some gorgeous rainbow cake or some really cool cake. But then you have to look at the title underneath, and it's like the most satisfying foods or the most satisfying cakes.
Right.
And then all it is ripped off pictures of cakes set to crappy music, sometimes with a lot of icing flowing. And it's like, okay, it may actually be satisfying to watch icing flowing, but that's not really, when I'm looking at YouTube for instructional videos, a machine squirting icing is really just not what I'm looking for.
Right?
Yeah.
I know there is so much dribble. So much dribble on YouTube today.
Oh, we can start with puns if you like. So I was actually even thinking, I had this terrible thought in the shower at the end of, because remember, we were supposed to do this interview last week and I was sick. And in my fever fatigue, I thought, you know, this is kind of like the holiday episode and that we could fill this with terrible holiday dessert puns. I'm just putting that out there for you.
I'm going to scratch my eggnog out of that one. I don't know.
Oh, don't beat yourself up about it.
Yeah, don't beat yourself up. No.
We'll whip this into shape any second now.
Break your buttercream. Yeah, when Jackie was on her lovely show the other day, I told her to break a buttercream. We should do that for all bakers who go on TV. No more breaking legs. It's break a buttercream.
For a cake decorator, if you break a leg, it probably means you broke the leg of your figure that you had pre-dried.
Yes.
It's right. Terrifying. Like, don't break my real leg. I don't care about my real leg. Don't break my figure.
Just don't break my figure. My family won't breathe around things. That's all right. To check out my newest creation that I actually just released today as part of Shannon Orr's Christmas at the Movies, which probably by the time you know in January when you release this, it's going to be like, oh, I saw that already. But I did The Fairy of The Ghost of Christmas Present from Scrooge.
I saw that.
Pink Fairy, yeah. Carol Kane, and she's got the toaster, and, you know.
I love that
scene. It's painful, Frank. We must have watched that movie 100 times this week.
Yeah, I did see that go by today. Well, I want people to have stuff to listen to while they're doing their Christmas baking, because, you know, even the non-decorators out there, this is the season. I was on the Nestle consumer panel and a few of those other type of consumer panel things, and man, the surveys they asked about how much baking are you doing for, they start right before U.S. Thanksgiving. How much baking are you doing for this week? How much are you baking? How many bags of chocolate chips do you think you're going to buy? How many bags of flour do you think you're going to buy? I mean, like at Easter, they'd ask you how many bags of candy you're going to buy, right? At Valentine's,
crazy,
they ask you how many bags of candy. But come mid-November, all of those corporations, all they want to know is how much baking you're going to do. They just assume everybody, not just us, everybody is making up a storm. So what better time to listen to a podcast where we make terrible, terrible puns?
Yeah. You bet. You bet. I mean, We're baking up a pun, you know.
We're baking up.
I make poopy puns on the fly. What can you say?
I know. That pudding one has been sitting on a note for a week. I was very proud of it when I was delirious with fever.
I'm glad you're feeling better. Get this. I had a person send me a request for a cake for 10 people. this next weekend.
Of course it
is. I know. We're like all waiting for the punchline. And she sent me the blog of the cake she wants me to make.
What, like someone else's blog instructions?
With the recipe and all the directions.
Okay.
And the macarons on top. And the drip. And the watercolor buttercream. And the gold sparkles. And the pink champagne cake. With the strawberry, real strawberry filling. Hey, here's the recipe, and this is the cake I want. How much? And I'm so bad, I haven't even answered her email.
You're like, well, you could ask the person who posted that.
Yeah, right? Sorry, no. If it's a new recipe, I don't do that. I mean,
yeah.
if you're gonna have a cake the size of the Sagrada and you want a specific recipe, I'll do everything I can for you. But for 10, somebody else's blog, I'm going to have to say, pass.
Well, you know her budget was $25.
Oh, you know it.
and look, when all these customer complaints come up, they're always, short-term rush orders,
always.
Copying someone else's thing, irrational flavor / sponge type choice, and no budget. Like, they always hit those same marks. I mean, over and over. I wish more people would call in their customer complaints, even anonymously or whatever. For your amusement, here's one of my friends who isn't in the cake business, but understands what it's like to be an artist getting ridiculous requests, calling in with her version of what it's like.
I'm having an enormous Christmas party this weekend for about 80 of my best friends, and I really need a very spectacular fairy-themed Christmas cake. I'd like it to be made of fruitcake, and I need it by this weekend. It's an emergency. I've got a budget of up to £60, and everybody would like a nice big piece of cake. So if you could please get back to me and let me know when I can expect it delivered, it'd be brilliant. Thanks so much, and Merry Christmas!
Yeah, there was a pricing thread recently that I found very encouraging because it made me realize, a lot of times the people are like, I want this crazy cake. And you're like, okay, I can do it, not a problem. And they're like, but I only want to pay $2, well, it works out to $2 a serving.
That's right.
You know, and you're like, wait a minute, not even Costco serves cake for $2 a serving. What? You know? And it becomes so painful because then you do have people who do price by the slice, right?
Yeah.
The only way that I want to know how many people you're feeding is how I could scale it.
Yeah.
That's it. And then everything else is hourly based. So if you say, well, it only feeds 20 people, I don't care, if it's a big, long, skinny design and it's only going to feed 40, but it's going to take me a week to execute.
Yeah.
That's the price you're going to pay. And that equivalency is extremely difficult to get across to a consumer who has never experienced what our cake art does.
Yeah, and they have no clue what a serving size is. I mean, we could debate till the cows come home about what a serving size is anyway. Do we go with what Wilton says is a serving size, or what PME says, or what this bakery says, or what your best friend down the street says is a serving size? Okay, that's a debate in and of itself. But the consumers, I'll tell you right now, they all think it's bigger.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And you know what? In the end, I'll give you another kitchen cake. It's not bricks.
Yeah.
Right? It's my architecture.
That's right.
It's the glass and metal and flying ceilings and buttresses. That's what you're paying for.
Yeah.
You're not paying for bricks. If you need extra bricks, I'll give you extra bricks.
That's
not a problem. But it becomes difficult when you have, especially like on forum boards, where people are trying to compare pricing.
And they say,
how much for this cake? And I won't touch those with a 10-foot pole
now. Me either.
But for exactly that reason, because it was a sculpted cake, and people say, oh, well, it serves 40 times 5. That's a $200 cake. You're like, no, it doesn't work like that, you know?
For my cake page, which, I mean, let's be clear, my cake page, when I finally got around to posting my how to buy a cake from me, I have sold cakes, but those were all very on the fly type things. When I finally got around to posting my how to buy a cake page, no one's ordered a cake from me since. I think because I laid down some harsh rules.
I have to
partly because it's not my focus, right? So I don't want to make 5 Paw Patrol and Minecraft cakes this week. I don't want to.
Right.
If I needed the money, that would be different, but I'm fortunate enough that I don't have to focus on that right now. But so the way I've put my pricing out there, and in talking to my friends, they've told me it makes more sense. I am pricing by the cake, and I'm defining a cake as what your average customer thinks of if they buy a box mix and they make the 2-layer 8-inch round, right? That's a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Because
sure.
Most people, what I can say to a client is, if you were just going to make some box mixes for your party, how many would you make based on how many people who are coming and what size slice you want? Like, and if they go, oh, I don't think one would be enough, but 3 would be too many, then we price by the cake. And then it goes up from, you know, a single 8-inch round, very basic thing. It has a flat minimum. And then now if we start carving, if we start adding tiers, if we're adding certain design elements, that's where the custom pricing is going to come in. But by having that minimum of a very basic covered cake with pretty much no extraneous design on it, I've priced that at 75 pounds, which is very high, but because I don't want orders, I would drop that down really fast if I needed to take orders. But by defining it that way, my friends come and look at that and they go, huh, okay, I understand what that means. Because if you tell them a serving,
they don't know what it means, and if
they're looking for a reason to be mad at you, to give you that bad Yelp review for whatever reason, that's where half of them are going to come at you. Well, they said this served 40, but it only served this because you went by an industry standard serving size that is not an I'm hungry standard serving size.
Yeah. Do you remember that whole one that was going around with the beautiful layer cake and the lady puts the cutting board up against it? She takes a long bread knife and it was like how to properly cut the cake, and it had the beautiful little meringues on the top, and she cuts this long 1-inch slice of this huge 10-inch wide by 10-inch tall cake, you know, 8-inch tall cake, and then she lays the board down and she proceeds to cut 2-inch wide slices of this 1-inch thick, you know, slab of cake. People are like, oh, those slices are too small.
That's right.
And all I can think of is my southern grandmother with the wedges. Right? We're going to cut your little wedge cake, honey. And, of course, it was like 4 inches wide at the backside.
That's right.
You know, this huge triangle of cake. And you get 6 slices out of a whole 8-inch. Yeah, that's what they expect. And it's like, you know, if we could just be clear what it is you want, I'll give you as much brick as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not what you're buying. You're not buying a brick from me. But that's a very useful tool to quantify it. I mean, because, you know, everything I do is from a 9x12.
Right.
Everything. I don't have any molded, I don't have any rounds. I don't have any of that stuff. I think I have a few rounds. But mostly what I have is 9x12s. And everything I need, I cut from those bricks.
Right.
So I like that. I'm gonna steal that and use that.
You should. I mean, I think as an industry, if we started thinking more like the cake muggles, as I call them, right? Like the people who don't get it. Instead of trying to force them to understand what we know, we need to come to their level and say, they don't get it and they're going to be disappointed. Look, I mean, if I don't eat cake at parties and stuff, I don't tend to... If I'm going to eat a piece of cake, I want to, you know, I want to nurse that thing for 2.5 hours in front of TV with my knitting. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how I eat cake. And it's going to be a wedge. It's going to be a nice big piece because I don't do that very often. But I'm not going to take my 2 bites and go, I wish I had more. No, I'm going to eat that piece of cake until I'm like, I am done with cake for this week. That's how I want to eat cake. I mean, I'm diabetic. I can't eat cake every day. So, but like, if someone gives me one of these, you know, 1 by 2 inch things, it's like, oh, well, that's just a sample. Like, I'm disappointed in that. I'm disappointed in the industry thing. And I don't even eat cake at other people's parties because it's usually too sweet anyway. But you know what I mean? So if I'm disappointed and I know, then what is someone else who's not? Like, what is an 8-year-old does not want a 2 by 1 inch piece?
I mean, I figured you could always have another one, too.
Well, there is, you know, that.
Especially if you're at an event, right? I mean, that's, if you're true. At an event, especially a big event, you know, it's like, if you really want another piece of slice, go back, have another slice. You know what I'm saying? There's always extra cake at these things, always. I rarely see an event where they finish the cake, you know? So, I mean, I'm all for having as much cake as you want to have. But, you know, what really torques me off was when people are like, okay, I want a big slice. And that's cool. Have a big slice. But then they take 2 bites and they decide they don't like the cake.
Oh, yeah. That's wasteful.
And then I'm like, you know, you could take in my little chinchy slice, my little two-inch cube. You could have ate it and you could come back for as many more as you wanted, as long as they lasted out. So I totally get you. It's like cake at home versus cake at an event.
Oh, totally.
And cake at a birthday party is totally different. It should be like a sheet cake, you know, stuff your face with.
Well, but then again, I mean, like, you know, we both got kids. If we bring a cake to an event and it's got decorations on it, what's the first thing every kid starts doing? I want the face. I want the letter. I want part of my name. They are looking at that and they are seeing the part they want. Whether or not they actually eat the fondant isn't the point. They want to own and consume a specific part of the outside of that cake. If you do the catering method where someone's getting interior only, someone's mad. You can't do interior only slices for an 8-year-old's birthday party. You're going to have a riot. You can do that for
parents. That's what Mama eats. You give that slice to me. I don't want no fondant.
Yeah, I don't want that either.
You give me the inside slice. I'm cool with that. Is it gluten free?
I guess. Yeah, you can give it to the parents. Well, then the parents at birthday parties, there's too many of this. And this is, you know, this isn't just parents at birthday parties. This is mom groups, the whole, you know, all this parenting thing. This whole thing where particularly women are shamed for wanting the treat. We're not to be seen to be eating, so you have to feign like you don't really want any, and I'm guilty of it myself. I'm a fat woman, and I feel judged by society, and I've done this myself. Oh no, I couldn't possibly. Oh, okay, since you're insisting, thank you.
No, have a slice.
Yeah,
if you're hungry, have a slice.
I'm better about it now, but you know, when I was a new mom, I was a little bit more like, I didn't want to be seen to be wanting the cake. But so what always happens is the one who protests the most, oh, I couldn't possibly, they're the one who comes back for seconds because it's good cake and they're hungry. Uh-huh. That poor woman hasn't had cake in a month. Give that woman
the skinnier. The skinnier they go back for seconds. You're like, yeah, have a third.
That's right.
Can I wrap some up for you?
That's right. Oh, if you come to one of my kids' parties, you're going home with cake because I don't.
Yeah.
I don't invite enough people relative to the size of design I want to make for my kid.
Right.
So, and my freezer, I have a big freezer and it's still not big enough. So if you come to one of my kids' parties, I'm bringing saran wrap with me. And well, it's not even saran wrap. That's, you know, whatever. Cling film. Bako foil. It's called Bako foil here. Has nothing to do with bacon. I don't know. It's just called Bako foil. It's neither bacon nor foil, but it's called Bako foil. So that's the plastic wrap. But I take that whole thing with me, and it's like, okay, we've served the cake. Right, I'm now cutting the rest of this into giant chunks. Here, you're taking this home. Oh, no, I could. Yes, you are. Your husband's not here. Here, you need some cake.
That's right. That's
your
right.
In-laws need cake. You are all,
I've had that happen more often with my cakes than the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's almost always plenty of cake. Even the ones where it's like, where's the cake? Like one of my Blues Traveler's cakes with the cat head, you know, the head was full of cake and the tent was full of cake, maybe 40 servings. By the time everybody got a piece, you know, they came back for seconds and it was gone. But that was like one of the only ones where there's not extra cake. Take the extra cake, you know, everybody gets a little. I make pound cake and Swiss meringue buttercream and I promise them. I'm always like, you know, if you really want a second slice, I'll save you one. And it's always the person always like, oh, man, that was really good. You know, that was like, whoa, that was cake.
Hi, I'm Kyla Myers, the president of Capital Confectioners and one of the coordinators of Austin's That Takes the Cake Sugar Art Show and Cake Competition. We'd like to wish you and yours a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year. Bake on!
Americans are a little bit different too. They like box mix, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. And I've priced it out that I prefer to bake from scratch. It's just easier for me. But my own research has determined that the American palate prefers Duncan Hines. So there it is.
When I lived in the States, I bought, there was a Betty Crocker triple fudge cake. So I think it had like chocolate chips in it, which meant it wasn't good for carving. But so I'm assuming I wasn't carving. The Betty Crocker triple chocolate cake. So it came with an envelope of the Hershey Special Dark Syrup. And then I had more that I would add. So it would be this like thick, muddy, dark, rich cake. And everyone liked it. No, I never had any complaints. In fact, you'd get the proverbial, you know, that thing that, again, the cake muggles do. Oh, my God, and it tastes good, too. Yeah, no, I didn't serve you crap with prettiness on top. I actually do know. Oh, that drives me crazy on social networks. Well, I bet it doesn't taste any good. Why? Why? Because you can't have pretty and taste. What is wrong with you that you have to crap on this? Oh, God, drives me up the wall when people, I've stopped posting cakes on G+ because I got sick of those kind of, well, I bet it doesn't taste any good. Yeah. Okay, so it tastes good. So people really like that cake. And I would usually do either a chocolate buttercream or the chocolate ganache. Since moving here, when I first came here, I didn't have a mixer, and so I needed a recipe that did not require a mixer, because box mixes are really rare here, and frankly, finding a chocolate one, all they have is devil's food, which is fine if you like devil's food, but I like a darker. So I found this BBC recipe, and it's one of these dump cakes, as I call them, where you dump everything into one bowl, which feels wrong and horrible when you've never done it before. And then you add hot water, which activates the cocoa. And now this batter is a liquid and you're convinced you've wrecked this. Like the first time I'm like, this is just a drunk recipe. I don't know what's going on. And it is the best. I lower the sugar from what the original recipe. I up the cocoa. But this is the only cake I make now. And everybody's happy with it. I make it with ganache that I make with dark chocolate and double cream. you're Americans with your heavy cream. That is adorable. No. You need some double cream.
Double
cream has so much fat in it. There's so much fat in the double cream that when you make your ganache, there's a high incidence of breaking the ganache. So I had to learn how to mix the tablespoon of milk in to whip it up to unbreak your ganache because there's just so much fat in it.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's good. My friends have learned to take a small slice because this cake is good and dense and rich and knocks you into next Tuesday, right? Like, it's good.
See, that's just it, you know? I mean, you get it right.
I had a piece of that cake today, the butterfly project that we did with Kyla.
Yes.
When I made that cake, I immediately gave away huge chunks of it to Corin, my husband's work, and I had a couple friends come over and take chunks of it away, and the rest of it went in the freezer, and so I'm still working through this. There's still Robin birthday cake in the freezer. Her birthday's in May. So, and there's, that's why for Peo's birthday, we made a small cake so we could actually get through it. But she did her own TARDIS cake, which was pretty awesome. Although now it keeps showing up in my photos on Facebook. So it's like my Facebook photos are like, you know, high art cake, high art cake, high art cake, really wonky TARDIS cake, which looks like I must have
loved it. I thought it was great.
It's amazing because she's
extremely well done.
It was because she's 12.
You know?
But if you don't know me and you just look at my photos, it's like it looks like I was drunk one day when I made this TARDIS because I didn't make that cake. My 12-year-old made that cake. I know I kind of need to label it like this is my 12-year-old's awesomeness. This is not my drunkenness because I don't even drink. But so today I had, because I hadn't had, not only had I not had cake in, it's probably been a couple weeks, I didn't eat last week because I was sick. So today, after I had an actual lunch, which was the first actual lunch I've had in 2 weeks. Because I've been down to 2 meals a day. And so now I've got the antibiotic. Everything tastes terrible. But I've discovered chocolate actually briefly erases that. So I pulled out one of those slices of cake. And it was a big one. Like, it was a little too. But, you know, I sat here editing the podcast. And for an hour and a half, I had little nibbles of the cake.
Yes. Cake is good. I mean, you know, here in Boulder, Colorado, we have a very high instance of health nuts, of people who are really into their veganism and their personal fitness and their yoga and their namastes, and, you know, good for them, you know, whatever floats your tank. But I love it when they turn to me with the anti-sugar thing. And I'm like, you know, it got me for a long time, and finally I came up with my answer. And I just look at him and I give him a smile and I say, well, even Elmo knows that cake is a sometimes food.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, you know, everybody likes cake. Why? Yeah. Now I want some chocolate cake.
I'm sorry, come over to my freezer. There's so much chocolate cake in my freezer. Oh my god.
Like, if I came out that way, I'm eating the bacon from Radmore Farms.
I know you're gonna eat Radmore Farms bacon. There's some of that in my freezer.
Oh, bacon.
You should just come over, we'll have bacon and cake and
Bacon cake.
There are reasons why I pay my way into Kyla's good graces and to sleep at her house during the Austin show. Before I come to Austin, I go to Costco here and buy a case of dairy milks for Kyla. and usually Kinder eggs, but now Dawn was warning me that the Kinder eggs are actually being seized out of luggage, but now they're actually going to have Kinder eggs in the U.S., but they're going to separate out the toy. I don't even know how that works. It's all very weird.
So we can get any kind of gun you want, but no Kinder eggs.
No, that's the dangerous stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Those are dangerous.
I told my husband about that the other day. He almost peed himself laughing. He's like, what is a Kinder egg? And I had to explain the whole thing to him, and we had a good laugh.
Where's
I already knew that it's the United States.
The mockery on this side is we can't use some America colors because, you know, there's that bogus study that said that some of the colors cause hyperactivity, even though, like, we all know, no, what causes hyperactivity is that you're at a birthday party. You can serve a sugar-free, if you served Raisin Bran at a birthday party, the kids are still going to bounce off the walls, people. It is not because
you know
of blue food coloring.
Here in Boulder, they serve vegetable trays at the Halloween party, and they still bounce off the walls.
Of course they do, because it's situational. And also, there's no reliable study showing that any healthy child with a normal healthy metabolism is made hyperactive by sugar. That is not the case. If your kid is hyper because of sugar, take them to the doctor because it's not even diabetic. That is a metabolic disorder if your kid is actually made hyper by eating sugar. And the modern food colorings are completely safe, but because someone at the EU got convinced on that hyperactive study, we can't buy the same colors here. So some of my American colors are technically craft use only here. And then
I hear you on that.
So then problem we've been having is, okay, so like, you know, if you go buy some rainbow sprinkles, you're going to get bright, bold colors, right? I cannot buy bright, bold colors here. So like, I was running out, you know, Lux brand sprinkles. I had a giant thing of those. They were very kind when we were doing the Bake-A-Wish stuff in Austin. They donated a bunch of the big canisters of their rainbow mix. I think it was called Carnival or something like that. Their rainbow, you know, regular sprinkle. I'm talking about the Jimmies, not the little discs, the nice sprinkles. Good quality Lux sprinkles. I'm almost out. So I was looking around to buy some here, and I kept buying rainbow things. And they'd come all these, like, really weak pastels. And I'm like, oh, this, I mean, I guess they're okay, but that's not, I want a bright blue and a bright green. So I finally went to a company that does a lot of sprinkle stuff here. They were at Cake International. And I said, you know, I really want some bright rainbow. And they're like, well, we have this. I'm like, yeah, no offense, but this is really pastel. And she's like, well, what about this? I'm like, oh, that the blue's closer in this one, but still like this. And she goes, oh, you're looking for American sprinkles. We're not allowed to put that much food coloring in our sprinkles here because it causes hyperactivity.
You know, but wait a minute. Remember Elmo? what does Elmo say? Sprinkles are sometimes food.
Exactly.
I mean, where I get really messed up with it is when they take a yellow dye and they put it in a corn chip or in a cereal.
Or bread.
That you can't eat large amounts of it every day. Then, I mean, it's kind of like, why does it need to be there?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
Small amounts in treat foods, I don't, you know, and again, based on something that is not demonstrated, I agree. It's really, really good. And I'm the opposite way with my magic colors, right? I'm a magic colors champion. But the FDA says, well, they're an Israeli company, so therefore, you know, and as far as I know, they're still working on it.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. You can't use yours except for craft work. Well, same way with my magic colors. If I have a collab or a personal project, I use them. Otherwise, I got to use something else that apparently you would probably like to have too.
Well,
I didn't realize it was so severe there that it would affect you that way too. I mean,
and it's so arbitrary. That's what gets me, is it's so arbitrary that the FDA will say something's fine. No, but we can't have it in the EU/UK. But Australia will say something's fine, but the Americans can't have, like, Rolcam, right?
Right.
You can't have Rolcam Dull. I am sitting right under a giant pot of the Rolcam Gold that I'm allowed to put on edible things, and it's an edible product. Yep. I'm not talking about disco dust plastic. I'm talking about actual food-based, you know, shiny stuff. And I can put that on food, and you can't, because the FDA won't approve it, but the EU/UK has, because they have it. Right. And it's purely because they have a deal with Australia, I think, or something in the chain, and that's what really gets me, is when it's an economic deal, it doesn't even have anything to do with actual studies or actual safety. It's who's made a deal with who, and who's pushed something through first, or who has made a stupid complaint that isn't based on science. Ugh.
Well, you know, you're right. I don't know what's going on with that, but you're right. It's foolish. I can't see how a collar that I, you know, is all these things certified, some of which are way more strict, like the kosher and the parva. And I mean, there's a whole list for the magic collar of stuff that they've, you know, regulations that they've passed, but not the FDA.
Right.
And it's like, you just got to call foul. And
it's the arbitrariness of these rules. Now, I mean, I am 100% behind a legitimate rule.
Right.
It's come up now, this will be the third podcast in a row, talking about the disco dust. Because I mentioned it talking in my Cake International thing, because we're talking about plastics and plastics going into the ocean. And how in the interview with Mary, I'd been talking about how I'd just been reading that a bunch of nursery schools here in the UK are banning craft glitter, not because of the annoyance that it is, but because it is going into the oceans and it is contributing to the garbage. So that's making me realize, well, the Disco Dusty, I don't want to pick on just that brand, because it's not just that brand, but when we use those, the plastic-based, not edible things, it is going into water stream. It is a problem, and we do need to, as an industry, take a step back and go, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be using this. And it's not food, and it's probably safe to pass it. Like, if you ate a little bit of disco dust this year, you're fine. But yeah, if you're eating it all the time, that's not good for you. And so I am totally on board with rules that say you shouldn't eat plastic.
Don't get me started about glitter. I hate glitter with a passion. I'm sorry. Yes, I will be the skunk at the party. We do not have glitter in this house. I once had glitter give me an unspeakable cyst in a really private area.
Oh,
and I'm telling you, glitter is the devil. Mm. And this new finding, I am not surprised at all. And I'm so sorry. I don't want to be a downer, because I know people love glitter, but man, I hate that stuff. What did you say about how you can never get rid of it? Once you touch the glitter, it's on everything, you know. And I mean, I saw the disco dust thing and I wondered instantly how that was edible.
Well, it was never marked as edible. It was always marked as non-toxic decoration use only.
Non-toxic. But it sold right alongside.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I bought it. Everybody
a mica dust, which is edible, you know. It's, and mica is an inert mineral. It's going to go right through, you know, right? Same as gold or even silver. Well, colloidal silver will somewhat digest and ionize, but you know what I'm saying. There's a difference between indigestible and non and edible,
right?
Big diff.
Like, I'm not going to, you know, if someone's making a figure topper and they add a little bit of blush to a cheek on one of these, you know, dusts that's, you know, decorative use only, I'm not going to quibble that. But, you know, you see some cakes and they are covered top to bottom in disco. First of all, that's like $20 worth of disco dust.
Right.
And that's not okay, people. You can't do that.
Oh, I watched a video where a person was mixing a latte with the holographic rainbow white, you know, disco dust stuff, and she dumps like a quarter teaspoon into this latte and stirs it up, and it's, ooh, look how pretty, you know. And it was a viral video. It had like a million views.
Of course it did, because it was
tagging
pretty.
Their friends. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, okay. So the other one I'm annoyed at right now, and in fact, I just told off one of my grocery stores here because they were selling a drink with this. Activated charcoal is a medicine, people. You should not be putting it. It is not a food coloring. I don't care if it makes your ice cream, like, because there was a whole thing over the summer about activated charcoal and ice cream. Let's talk about what activated charcoal does. It is used by poison control. So, like, if you ingest a poison, it pulls the poison out of your body. That is a legitimate use to put activated charcoal in your body. Some people use it as for digestion stuff under the care of a physician. Because another thing that activated charcoal does is it absorbs the medication you've taken, including the birth control pill. So if you you can go and drink one of these, like this Ocado, this grocery store it's an online ordering grocery store, right? So I order my groceries from every week. They just posted on Facebook how they have this new, you know, health shake that's got activated charcoal. And I'm like, whoa, guys, do you have a warning on that about the fact that could negate birth control pills, life-saving medication? Like, I mean, if you're diabetic and you're on metformin and you take activated charcoal, guess what's not working anymore? Your metformin.
Yep.
If you're on antibiotics.
I found that one out the hard way.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten. I had an ice cream cone. It was a black ice cream cone.
Yeah, this was a big trend.
And I totally spaced it. And I'm like, why do I feel like I'm going to die right now? And I realized it was because of the ice cream cone, the black ice cream with the activated charcoal.
That's right.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
You are so right.
I mean, because when I first saw this trend, the ice cream trend coming, I was like, there's something a little weird to me, but I'm going to research that. And it just took one Google to find out that, it's not that you can't eat it. It's not that it's poison. It's that it is a medicine used under the care of a physician. And if you start putting it in things, if you want to make a dark, dark cake, I'm sorry, you're better off with a squirt of AmeriColor, whatever anyone says about these E-number codes. You are better off with that big old squirt of AmeriColor than activated charcoal, because AmeriColor isn't going to negate your birth control pills.
Or your kid's medication. What if you bring a kid to a party, like you say?
Yeah.
And it's the one time of year he eats cake, or, you know, Elmo's right, let's have some sometimes food. What would you rather have him have? You know, a mouthful of black fondant that makes his teeth black, or something that's going to make his medication stop?
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. No. Yeah. If anyone out there is using activated charcoal as a colorant, stop it now. Because that is really dangerous. I can't believe that's not more regulated. I can't believe Ocado can just say, oh, we've got this new shake. And no medical labels on it whatsoever. That is scary.
It is scary.
That is something where we need regulation. We don't need regulation because I want to make a Cookie Monster cake. That's okay. The Cookie Monster, you know, now we're talking about licensed images, whatever. That's a whole different story.
Uh-oh.
But if someone wants to make.
She didn't say, she said, she said cookie eater.
Biscuit eating blue fuzzy man.
Yes, there you go.
Biscuit eating blue fuzzy man. Biscuit eating blue fuzzy man. If I'm going to make a biscuit eating blue fuzzy man, this is all the Southerners are like, what? What does the thing like gravy? Huh? Yeah. But like if you're going to make, you know, you use the grass tip, right? And you put your fondant eyes on it and you stick a half cookie in it on the top of a cupcake. That is a good beginner level. You know, any parent can do it with their kids, you know, party decorating trick, right? If you eat that blue icing, that is not going to hurt you. But if you made those cupcakes with activated charcoal in it, it's going to hurt you. But which one's more regulated is the blue.
Right.
That blue food coloring is more regulated than the activated charcoal, and I find that terrifying.
And even if you made an Elmo in red, it would be okay because it's a sometimes food.
Right. Well, and also the red, people get all panicky about red food coloring. Guys, it's not 1950. It's 2017. Yeah. The stuff that was really, really toxic in 1950 in red food coloring has been illegal for decades. Yeah. It is for not decades. That carcinogenic, nasty yep. stuff. It is different.
Yep. I remember when they took red M&Ms out, and then when they came back, I was like, hey, yeah. red M&Ms are bad. I mean, it's so funny, too, when people freak out because they're like, oh, my God, what do you mean it's made from beetles? They're like, what's wrong with you? Okay. All natural?
That's, I know.
Yay, Starbucks.
Every time someone goes on about natural, there was a new healthy food store, quote unquote, open up in Austin, which tells you something already. And I went to check it out to see what it had, right? And this guy beside me, we're looking at the meat counter, and he says, do you think this is all natural? And I looked at him, I said, well, uranium's natural.
Yep.
He's like,
so
oh.
arsenic and cyanide, and that's a byproduct from mining. That's, yummy.
There's cyanide in apple seeds, so, you know, I mean, that's natural.
Yeah.
There's all kinds
all
of things
natural.
That you know, once upon a time, a T-Rex was natural, and it would kill you, so, like,
that's right.
Natural.
Salt's natural, but and so's water. But if you take either one of those too much, you're gonna die.
That's right. So much good natural stuff, guy. Just activated charcoal, probably natural. I don't know. Is it activated? Does that make it not natural? I don't even know. But point being,
I don't either.
Yeah,
I thought it was charcoal. I don't even know what activated means.
In a new segment I'm going to call Kimberly Googles Things For You While You're Busy So You Don't Have To, here's what I just looked up about activated charcoal versus regular charcoal. According to several sources, I learned that activated charcoal, sometimes called activated carbon, is regular charcoal that has been processed to add more oxygen to it in order to increase its surface area and thus its porosity, or how good it is at absorbing other stuff. That's why it's good at pulling poisons or medications out of your system. And that's why it also works well in water filtering. This should not be confused with charcoal briquettes used for your barbecue, because those are frequently doused in flammable chemicals, so they'll burn more quickly and easily. And if you thought activated charcoal pulling your medications out of your system was bad enough, it's reasonable to conclude that eating charcoal briquettes is not recommended, unless you've always wanted to be your own Roman candle. Do not consume charcoal in any form, people, unless it has been given to you under the supervision of an actual doctor. And if a doctor tells you to eat a charcoal briquette, run away! That's not a doctor, that's a cartoon character in disguise. Remember, one of this show's mottos is, don't die, we don't have time. This has been a helpful handy hint from Kimberly Googles Things For You While You're Busy, so you don't have to.
So...
Awesome. Kim, I'm going to have to let you go. It's 4:30,
yep.
And I have to go cook for my family.
Yep, and I should probably go to bed soon.
Yes, we don't want you to relapse. That would be not good.
Oh, no, we don't have time for that, especially because my husband is in Japan right now.
Oh, mine has two trips next week, too.
Corin gets home, I think, on Saturday, and then on Sunday night's leaving for Bournemouth. So that at least is in England. But yeah, he's in Japan right now, and so it's like that whole thing where I was going to make my birthday cake last week using the innovative Sugarworks structures that they've sent me to review. I'm meaning to make this cake for months, going to make it for my birthday last week, and then I was too sick. It's like, well, I guess I could make it this week while I'm solo parenting and doing two podcasts. Sure, that's something I have time for or not.
Do it. All the extra time you have.
I need a Hermione time turner. That's now you want a cake tool that will sell. It's the Hermione time turner. We all need one of those.
Yeah, right? Yeah, along with the little clutch bag she has with all your tools.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But it has to be like a bag of holding, so like when you open it, like it just furls out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There you go.
Right.
We're going to make $1 million with that. Millions.
Yes, I like that one.
Millions. Anyway, good talking to you, and good luck with the holiday season, and hope to see you soon in the new year.
Absolutely. Big hugs. Stay sweet.
Yep, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Make you a cake that gets you so excited that for a minute you forgot you're an adult.